Looks pretty good for a man that just walked from the Ogden Theater. That was one heck of a party, wasn't it? It is my honor to present the Honorable John Hickenlooper, Governor of the State of Colorado. Please welcome him.
Thank you.
Sit, please, be seated.
Good morning. I am grateful and honored to be in this chamber again with so many distinguished Coloradans. I see a lot of familiar faces and some new ones. Some of you are in hard-fought campaigns. A few of you even endured a prolonged period of vote counting. I can only imagine what that was like. Speaking of hard-fought campaigns, I think we do owe our thanks to the Broncos for another exciting season. And we want to give a big shout out and congratulate Tommy Caldwell of Estes Park, who just reached the top of El Capitan. Now, to all of you newly elected representatives, congratulations and welcome. I am confident that Colorado will benefit from your fresh ideas and enthusiasm. And to all of you re-elected members, thank you for your continued service to the state. During the first 4 years, Colorado's General Assembly bucked the trend in Washington as we avoided gridlock by walking the talk of bipartisanship. Collaboration has been the not-so-secret sauce of our state's success for many years. Congratulations to Senate President Bill Cadman and Majority Leader Mark Scheffel and Minority Leader Morgan Carroll and Assistant Minority Leader Raleigh Heath. Congratulations as well to Speaker Dickie Lee Hollinghorst, Majority Leader Crisanta Duran, House Minority Leader Brian Del Grosso, and an Assistant Minority Leader Lily Szabo. With the support of her caucus, Representative Duran makes history today as the first Latina Majority Leader. Actually, I guess she made history last week. I want to convey my gratitude, as always, to our incredible Lieutenant Governor Joe Garcia, whose support and perspective has been invaluable, not just to me, but to the entire state. Let us also express our solidarity with America's oldest ally, represented today by Jeffrey Richards, the Honorary Consul of France. We are grateful for the partnership we have with the tribes of Colorado, and today we are honored to have with us Manuel Hart, the chair of the Ute Mountain Ute Tribe. Now, only about, well, she could give Manuel applause. Only about a month ago, members of the Northern Cheyenne and Northern Arapaho tribes gathered on the west steps of the Capitol to commemorate a sad chapter in our state's history, the 150th anniversary of the Sand Creek Massacre. With unanimous support from Colorado's four living governors and on behalf of the good people of this state, I formally apologize for the atrocity that our government and its agents visited upon their ancestors. I am of the mind that we must acknowledge when things have gone wrong in the hope that we will get more things right. Healing begins with an apology, with empathy, and with kindness. During our inaugural festivities, we challenged, along these lines, Coloradans to engage in 10,000 random acts of kindness, which we can track with the simple hashtag, StateOfKind. And as we move forward this session, I'm confident that that spirit will continue here. I want to thank my cabinet and senior staff. I can't express my gratitude to them, but as well to all state employees, with special thanks to Major General Edwards and the Colorado National Guard, whose members always stand ready to help Colorado in emergency. We have mourned the loss of several Colorado-based servicemen and women, men and women this past year, and we have them and their families with us in our hearts. We also want to welcome newly elected Attorney General Cynthia Kaufman and Secretary of State Wayne Williams and re-elected Treasurer Walker Stapleton. That's Walker R. Stapleton. The esteemed members of the Colorado State Supreme Court are with us this morning. Our thanks to all of you as well. United States Congressman Jared Polis and Ed Perlmutter are here. Can't say I blame them. I'd much rather be here than in Washington, D.C. as well. We are also most fortunate to have with us former U.S. Senator and U.S. Secretary of the Interior, Ken Salazar, who has been one of our greatest public servants, not just for Colorado, but for the United States of America. And last but certainly not least, we are grateful to have the mayor of Denver, who's doing a phenomenal job, Mayor Michael Hancock. And the mayor of Colorado Springs, Steve Bach. Also doing a phenomenal job. Now, just as many of you do, I took the main stairwell to the second floor this morning, and along the way, walked by the murals of the first floor rotunda. I've walked by those murals many times, and I confess that I don't always stop to appreciate them. But in the days that have led up to the start of this session, I've considered them quite a bit. The murals were completed in 1940 by Colorado painter Alan True, and the words written by Colorado poet Thomas Hornsby Farrell. Now, according to an eyewitness account, True and Farrell solidified their partnership and came up with a theme for the murals during a long, raucous night involving some drinking. And I kid you not, knife throwing. And Farrell sketched out what became their theme on a greasy paper bag left after they'd polished off a few cheeseburgers. The painter and the poet chose the perfect unifying theme for Colorado, water. The first panel is a poem by Farrell. It starts off, "Here is a land where life is written in water." An apt way to begin, as in the next eight panels, True depicts the story of Colorado, our past, present, and future, and how it all flows through water. True begins where he should, depicting one of the first natives of Colorado, an American Indian at work. Throughout the next seven panels, we see a pioneer and his family pushing west into Colorado, speculators mining the gold rush, early farmers planting crops, a construction crew laying our urban foundation, industrial laborers toiling at a power facility. It is something of poetry itself that these murals encircle our rotunda, as the topic of water flows around many of the decisions that we make in this building. 70 to 80% of Colorado's water falls on the mostly agricultural communities west of the Continental Divide, while 90% of our population is on the east in the more urban Front Range. Now, Colorado is a semi-arid state, even when our snowpack is substantial, and the state looks like like it has what, or has what looks like a large water surplus, a drought always looms. Water in Colorado is always in finite supply. The long boiling disagreements over water have been well documented. Historically, folks west of the divide took the position that not one more drop would be diverted to the Front Range. And east of the divide would respond with, well, we'll see you in court. But just last month, after the largest civic engagement process in the history of Colorado, the Colorado Water Conservation Board at long last achieved what many believed was impossible. It brought together the disparate stakeholders from around the state and drafted Colorado's first ever statewide water plan. Now, representatives of urban areas recognize that locally sourced dairy and food is vital to all Coloradans, while the agricultural areas realize that they could not simply allow urban areas to dry up. The Colorado Water Plan represents a paradigm shift of cooperation and collaboration and goes a long way to ensure that we strategically allocate this precious resource to maximize our entire state's ability to grow and flourish. Now, I draw your attention to these murals and the water plan because in them, it seems there are valuable lessons. Lessons not only about how we manage our water, but also how we can best manage all of our resources. We are in a unique time when the decisions we make now will have an especially profound impact on whether our state grows stronger or stagnates. Members of the General Assembly, today I am pleased to say that despite the considerable challenges Colorado has faced, the state of our state is strong. According to almost every national ranking, Colorado is now one of the top states for business climate and job growth. Colorado's economic success is the result of risk-taking and investment of Colorado's private sector, the creativity of our innovators, and the hard work of the people throughout this state. Our Colorado blueprint has been rooted in doing everything possible to promote collaboration with business on the state, county, and local levels. Now, River Rim Teardrops is one example. Dolores County residents Tim and Peg Rossiter are avid campers. A few years ago, to pursue their passion, they bought a cargo trailer and turned it into a camper shaped like a teardrop, and they discovered a new business. With some marketing guidance and help from the Southwest Colorado Small Business Development Center, Tim and Peg launched River Rim Teardrops. Their company motto is, "We build them the old way because the old ones are still around." That's the sort of sound, sturdy motto that rings true to Coloradans. As the murals of True and Farrell created remind us, our state was founded by pioneers who packed wagons and dared to head into unmapped territory. And with their trailers, Tim and Peg remind us that the entrepreneurial spirit is alive and vital to the DNA of Colorado. Tim and Peg are here with us today. Please join me in asking them to stand, and let's congratulate them. In addition to building products the old-fashioned way, Colorado benefits mightily from our high-tech innovators. According to one recent count, 5 of the top metropolitan areas in the country for tech startups are located here in Colorado. It's not surprising, considering that Colorado has long been among the top states in the nation when it comes to aerospace and advanced manufacturing. Colorado's aerospace industry employs over 25,000 workers. Good jobs with good wages. Just last month, NASA took a giant step forward for mankind when it launched the Orion spacecraft toward Mars on its first voyage, and it traveled further into space than any spacecraft designed for astronauts in more than 40 years. Now, while Orion took flight from Cape Canaveral, much of the engineering took place right here in Colorado with Lockheed Martin and United Launch Alliance. To galvanize innovators and attract more technology-based startups to Colorado, we started the Colorado Innovation Network and launched the annual Coin Summit, now entering its fourth year. 2 years ago, Chris Klein and Franz Garsumke, not bad compared to Hickenlooper, but still, difficult name, the founders of a company called Rachio, won the $50,000 award at the last Coin for the most innovative startup idea. Chris and Franz invented a smart sprinkler called the Eero, which automatically adjusts for changes in weather. Now, while presenting at the Coin Summit, Chris and Franz did just the sort of thing that we'd hoped for. They were networking and met Noel Ginsberg, the CEO of Colorado's Intertech Plastics. Noel worked with Rachio to bring the Eero to production. Now, Rachio's smart sprinklers are in 1,000 Home Depots and launching into Best Buys and Apple stores. Please join me in asking Chris, Franz, and Noel to stand so that we can congratulate them and thank them for sprinkling our semi-arid state with their success. Our economic development strategy is to recruit, retain, and grow talent better than any state in the country, and to vigilantly seize opportunities to help Colorado businesses hatch and grow. Now, during the last few years, we have successfully lured major companies like Cool Planet Energy Systems, Hitachi, Ardent Mills, and Arrow Electronics. And just last month, we were able to persuade Panasonic, with the help of Mayor Hancock and his team, to locate a major hub in this state with a gain of 300 jobs. We successfully kept our companies here at home and helped them grow as well. Companies like Charles Schwab, Lockheed Martin, and Woodward, all of which gained thousands more jobs in the past few years. Now, your support of our Rural Economic Development Grants Program, our Main Street Improvement Initiative, and the promise of broadband expansion from last session's telecommunications reform law are all important steps to ensure that Colorado's recovery reaches all four corners of our state. We will not only continue these programs, we're going to do more. We spent 4 years implementing the Colorado Blueprint, the state's bottom-up strategy to economic recovery, focusing on key industries and regional development. In the coming months, our Office of Economic Development and International Trade will be launching Colorado Blueprint 2.0. The team will again be visiting all 14 regions of the state, soliciting a vision for economic development, starting with the counties where unemployment is most lagging, counties like Otero, Costilla, San Miguel, and Huerfano. The office will also launch a pilot program designed to attract the creative class of free agents, of independent contractors, to live and work in identified communities. Data suggests that this part of the creative class, this group of independent contractors and free agents, comprises up to 30% of the U.S. workforce and includes a wide spectrum of occupations, including science, engineering, education, computer programming, and arts and media. Through nonprofit partnerships, the program will provide subsidized space with high-speed internet and access to healthcare coverage, all at discounted prices. Bundling these services and providing a co-working environment will aid in the recruitment of this talent pool and foster our economic growth. This innovative idea came to us from former Colorado College President Dick Celeste and from Colorado Springs Mayor Steve Bach. And Mayor Bach is here with us today. I think this further exemplifies that no one party has a hold on great ideas. Please, Mayor Bok, stand up and let's give you a hand. Now, our challenge is to make sure that economic prosperity reaches every household in all 64 counties, every household. Despite our statewide economic resurgence, many out-of-work Coloradans are fighting to earn their way into the middle class. Almost 50,000 fellow Coloradans have been out of work for 6 months or more. Having been among the long-term unemployed myself, I know that many of our long-term unemployed are eager to have a chance to redefine themselves and to succeed. Now, we've launched an initiative that pulls together state resources from several departments with the single-minded objective to assist long-term unemployed workers to find work. People like Wendy Stedman. Last year, Wendy walked into a Colorado Workforce Center in Centennial and enrolled in the Displaced Worker Program. A veteran who served this country honorably, she had lost her job working in IT and communication systems. Wendy's workforce specialist provided her with resume and interview coaching skills. Together, they determined she would be more marketable with some specialized training. Wendy was approved to attend Microsoft Project certification classes, and eventually her previous employer rehired her as a technical project manager. Please join me in asking Wendy to stand so we can congratulate her on her new job and thank her for strengthening Colorado's economy. The investments we make in our workforce development programs benefit not only the long-term unemployed, but also employers and ultimately the entire state. Targeted workforce development and a strong education system are keys to continuing to support a strong middle class. Our current budget request for K-12 education includes a $480 million increase, of which the state is contributing 70%. In recent years, we've worked together to save extra money in the state education fund. Moving forward, our budget proposal includes an additional $200 million from the state education fund intended as a one-time increase for school districts to allocate as their elected boards decide. With or without this proposal, as we look beyond this year, the ability of the state general fund to protect the negative factor from rising even higher remains uncertain. Beyond questions of funding, we need to confront the truth about whether Colorado's kids are getting the education they need to compete and to succeed in the job market. But how do we know if we're getting the job done unless we accurately measure individual student growth? We look forward to the final recommendations of the 1202 task force, but already the outlines of a consensus are taking shape. Easing the testing demands on 12th graders in social studies and science, and streamlining tests in early years and finding flexibility with approaches to social studies might be among the right answers. But there is no doubt that maintaining consistent assessments in English and math through high school is fundamental. We look forward to working with all of you as we tackle this challenging but critical issue. Colorado must become not just a leader in education, but a leader in workforce. We need to become the best state in the country to recruit, retain, and grow great teachers. Licensure reforms, career ladders, and a fair evaluation system are critical. These efforts should not be designed to punish teachers, but rather to reward and inspire the good ones to become even better and to help the ones who are not so good yet to become better. Our goal should be to ensure that every Colorado child has equal access to a great education. That means taking a hard look at funding equity, at strategies to turn around struggling schools, to promoting innovation, and to supporting charter schools. An education after high school was once a sure path to the middle class, but today the price tag remains a stumbling block for too many of our fellow Coloradans. Chief among our priorities is reducing the cost of higher education for students and their families. Our Colorado Commission on Higher Education has set a goal that 66% of 25 to 34-year-olds hold a post-high school credential by 2025. But that's a long way away, and we should target 55% by 2020. In our proposed budget, we've asked for $107 million of additional funds to be transferred from the general fund resources to higher education. One of the returns on this investment is a cap on undergraduate tuition growth at no more than 6%, making college and thereby a pathway to a well-paying job in the middle class more accessible to more Coloradans. A portion of this request would also provide stabilization funds as the system moves to a new formula. It is a fast-changing world, and we must have a better system of higher education that is built to keep pace. We're doing what we can to doing what we can as a state to educate and graduate a homegrown workforce. But we know that it's not enough, and our ability to continue funding higher ed at this level may not last much longer. We must continue to identify and develop creative solutions. The goal of our new Colorado Opportunity Scholarship Initiative is to launch a network of state-matched scholarship funds across the state. We have already allocated $34 million to this project, and I hope the General Assembly will join me by allocating another $30 million more. The Colorado Quarterly Forum, a private enterprise, has already promised $1 million over the next 10 years, the first of what will be many contributions to this partnership with philanthropic and business partners. One of the more fertile fields of employment in Colorado has been our energy industry. Colorado has pursued an all-of-the-above energy strategy, helping our country approach energy independence. Now, throughout my first term, we've worked hard on the difficult conflicts that arise when the rightful expectation for peaceful lifestyle in our homes and neighborhoods runs up against our need for energy and the property rights that allow mineral owners to develop that energy. We crafted rules to increase setbacks, reduce noise, light, and dust impacts, protect groundwater, slash emissions, and disclose industry chemicals. We increased penalties for rule breakers, toughened spill reporting, added oversight staff, and strengthened local collaboration. And we're going to keep working at cultivating a robust energy industry, but at the same time, a healthy environment. As part of a compromise to keep economically devastating initiatives off the ballot last summer, we've worked with the Keystone Center and brought long polarized interests to the same table. After four meetings of this task force, people have stepped from their entrenched positions, come together, broken bread, or at least boxed lunches, and are talking to one another. As a matter of fact, they're meeting at this moment. I look forward to the recommendations of this task force and pledge to work with you and other stakeholders in developing our energy resources, protecting private property rights, as well as our natural environment, public health, and the people's quiet enjoyment to their homes and neighborhoods. We remain committed to being the number one healthiest state in America. Our plan to get there is the state of health. That's what we call it, the state of health, developed collaboratively by multiple departments with broad input from the healthcare community. Already, the rate of prescription drug abuse, a chronic issue in Colorado, has come down by more than 15%. We are resetting the Medicaid cost curve in this state through efforts like our Accountable Care Collaborative, Medicaid cost per capita is flat and trending down. We're one of the top five most successful states in reducing our number of uninsured citizens, but we need to do more. For decades, Colorado has had one of the highest teen suicide rates in the country. We recently launched the first ever statewide mental health crisis system, including a statewide hotline, mobile crisis workers, stabilization centers, and respite services to address this issue. We welcome a discussion in this chamber to sustain our momentum on preventative mental health treatment. We need to give schools the resources to identify and support kids at risk for serious mental health issues before they lead to suicide or violence. We don't want to lose one more life to this kind of tragedy. Now, when it comes to supporting healthy communities, we've been thankful for the partnership with the General Assembly as we've addressed serious societal challenge. In this next session, we continue our attention on child welfare. A recent audit recommended new funding to address workload issues for care workers. We've requested $6.6 million general fund money for 130 new caseworkers. This is the first step our Department of Human Services plans to take to right-size our caseworker capacity to meet the needs of vulnerable children. Our budget includes $4 million general fund increase in state funding for senior services, along with $2 million to provide a 1.7% cost of living adjustment to old age pension recipients. In the last 2 years, we requested and received funding to eliminate existing wait lists for supported living services. This year, we are requesting funding to eliminate the wait list for children with autism. Our Colorado, our state, cannot be the healthiest state for people if it is not also the healthiest state for the natural environment. Part of educating our kids also means getting them outside. Right outside for their physical and emotional health. Every schoolyard should be a living yard. Every child should be within walking distance of our schoolyards, our backyards, our parks. And every backyard should lead to the backcountry and eventually those special places that help to define Colorado. Mike King, the executive director of the Colorado Department of Natural Resources, will build on the progress we have already begun with Great Outdoors Colorado and will engage our federal and local open space partners to craft a statewide recreational trail system. From Rocky Mountain Arsenal Wildlife Refuge to the South Platte River, from Rocky Flats to Rocky Mountain National Park, this is but one example, originally thought up by Ken Salazar, of the type of world-class trail system that we can create here in Colorado. And we want to make sure we get more Colorado cyclists out there as well. We've asked Ken Gart, our volunteer bike czar, to assist us in launching a bike health initiative that will take on a number of large challenges, such as creating a publicly available data source to track existing bicycle trails, routes, and cyclist feedback, to seek funding for new construction for bicycle infrastructure, and to create a plan to connect bike routes across communities and around some of the tallest mountains in Colorado. Ken is here with us today, and we want to thank him for agreeing to this position. I appreciate you letting him know that he has our full support. We also ask for your participation and support in identifying a whole new approach to our outdoor spaces, a new generation of recreational crown jewels, expanding opportunities for people to hunt, to fish, to hike and explore the extraordinary natural beauty that only Colorado can offer. We need to challenge our partners like Great Outdoors Colorado, the Nature Conservancy, the Trust for Public Lands, our federal partners, and many others to help us assemble the most critical open spaces before it is too late. Catherine Lee Bates was inspired to write America the Beautiful atop Pikes Peak and looking out across the majesty of our state. So it seems fitting to call this initiative Colorado the Beautiful, where we can take these open spaces and combine it with trails and access so that every individual in our state is able to get access to the outside and to the wonders of our state. Now, managing this diverse landscape and this incredible natural resource has always been a top priority for our state. In Colorado, we know how to protect and preserve threatened or endangered species, while at the same time protecting grazing and multi-use rights. Conservation plans are very state-specific, with much stakeholder collaboration needed to strike just the right balance. We will continue to strengthen our partnerships with local governments and state and federal agencies, along with other stakeholders, to make sure that we find the right solutions for Colorado. We know that visitors already flocked to Colorado to enjoy all that this magnificent state offers, another record year last year. However, we are missing opportunities to market Colorado and really leaving dollars on the table. In our current budget proposal, we are asking funds to hire a chief marketing officer to strategically promote Colorado and to help us achieve the biggest marketing bang for each buck. Not all of the PR lately in Colorado has been about our sunshine and our tourism. Our new marijuana industry must continue to confront both public health and public safety concerns. At this time last year, we faced the question of whether it was even possible to have legitimate recreational marijuana industry and to regulate it appropriately. To date, everything suggests that our regulatory system is beginning to work. We have worked from scratch with officials, industry, law enforcement, concerned parents, and regulators, not to mention the General Assembly, to develop robust regulations that allow industry to develop and prosper in a safe and legitimate way. Both the Brookings and the Cato Institute have commended our work. Talk about polar opposites. We know many challenges remain. One of the ongoing public safety concerns is that the marijuana industry operates almost strictly in cash without traditional forms of banking. Cash-only businesses invite corruption. Just look at the history of prohibition. We will continue to push the federal government to allow banking for this industry. Another public safety issue we are committed to is addressing drunk driving. While we must continue to focus our efforts on anti-drunk driving measures like intervention, rehabilitation, and active enforcement, adequate punishment is also needed. Colorado is one of only four states that does not have a felony DUI law. We will work with you on a felony DUI law that brings justice to drivers who repeatedly drink and drive. Another way to do this. Another way to address public safety and make our state safer is to address infrastructure. Within the next 20 years, Colorado is projected to see our 5.1 million population increase by another 3 million people. That's 20 years. While the Department of Transportation reconnected the flood-damaged roads and bridges in record time, CDOT also widened lanes of the Veterans Tunnel Project on time and under budget, the first I-70 mountain expansion in the 50 years since I-70 was first built. That expansion needs to be just the beginning. We are committed to finding solutions that add capacity on I-25 and I-70. We need to think creatively about how we fund both of these expansions, all these expansions. We cannot wait for the federal government to solve transportation funding so that we can solve our problems in Colorado. We must take action, whether it be new funding sources or funding partnerships. It's going to be up to us to build our roads to the future. The last panel of the water theme murals Alan True and Thomas Farrell created depicts a small group of people gazing into a horizon where a future filled with innovation and possibilities is under construction. That future begins today. Our collective plans for next year are important. We will make solid and meaningful decisions on education, healthcare, public safety, and transportation. But we are facing the mathematical and inevitable conclusion of a system of tax and spending rules that evolved over decades. One change we can make now is to encourage fiscal responsibility and to help us direct our resources to where they are needed most. And that change would be to empower voters to make more informed decisions of the fiscal implications, or to have the fiscal implications of proposed ballot initiatives. We believe that the General Assembly should pass legislation that would provide Coloradans with a fiscal impact statement on the effect of proposed amendments to the state constitution in order to make the most thoughtful decisions. And we would all benefit from that. And then there's the heart of the fiscal thicket that I mentioned in my inaugural address. Under Tabor, rebates are required even as we see legitimate needs all over the state going unmet. Amendment 23 demands more new money than we can possibly expect to have 2 years from now. If we do nothing, if we pretend the future will take care of itself, and we're back here in 2 years facing what was clearly an avoidable crisis, history will show that we failed future generations of Coloradans. There is a legitimate debate of whether government should be a bit bigger or a bit smaller, but that misses the point. Regardless of size, government must work. Some people want to get rid of Tabor, some people want to get rid of Amendment 23, others want to get rid of Gallagher. There's no shortage of thorns in this fiscal thicket. And while we will continue to strategically prune, our state budget can only endure so much cutting. Just as stakeholders across the state succeeded in drafting a strategy for the state water plan, we should be coming together, dealing with the facts as we know them, and take a hard look at what is the most strategic way we can to allocate our resources and ask ourselves what will be the maximum benefit for all Coloradans. That last mural of the last of Alan True's panels, with the group of people looking towards a horizon with a future taking shape, has some wonderful words from the poet Farrell that we would be well served to keep top of mind. Beyond the sundown is tomorrow's wisdom. Today is going to be long, long ago. Now is when we have to come together. I'm no longer quoting True and Farrell. Now is when we must come together to address these issues. We don't need to throw knives. Just have the political courage to face the facts and to do real math. We can, if we work together, paint our own panel for the mural, one that will benefit generations of Coloradans to come. Thank you all very much for your patience, and God bless Colorado. Thank you very much.
Colleagues and guests, as our committee escorts the governor to his chambers, join me in another raucous round of applause for the governor of the great state of Colorado.